Welcome back to Kings of Columbus, Doug Lamorese and Bill Landis. We're making wild, bold, outrageous predictions, Landis, for what's going to happen with Ohio State in 2024. Like people like wild, outrageous things, right?
Yeah, I think so. Plus, it's nice to break up like the pre-spring discussion, yeah, which is only a couple weeks away now with like, you know, we're looking past the spring. We're looking past the spring and we're looking past fall camp. We're going right to the season.
Yeah, going right to the season. So we each picked five things. And then at the end, of course, we'll do what you're watching, what you're eating, what you're thinking. But let's just dive right into our wild predictions. And the first one is one that I'm not even sure what the record is because it's like, it's early. I didn't double check with Ohio State on this, but my wild prediction is that Jeremiah Smith will set Ohio State's true freshman receiving record this year. And Landis, I tried, I got the thing, you know, I write stuff down. I think if he gets to 500, he would set that record. For true freshmen, I like to make a distinction between true freshmen and redshirt freshmen because I think doing it the first time you're on campus rather than having a year to practice and all that makes a difference. Is that a real distinction in your mind or not a distinction that I should be worried about?
I think it's a distinction in my mind. Yeah. Not to take away from guys who do it as redshirt freshmen, but I think there's something different about doing it in your very first year on campus.
Okay. So like Michael Jenkins, for instance, had 836 receiving yards in his redshirt freshman season, the first season he played at Ohio State in 2001, but he was on campus in 2000, right? So like, we're not talking about that. From what I could tell, the three guys who have the biggest true freshman receiving seasons at Ohio State, Ted Ginn Jr. had 359 receiving yards in 2004. Garrett Wilson had 432 receiving yards in 2019, and Chris Carter, I think, has the record with 476 in 1984. I'll double check it before I talk about this again when we get to the season. The idea that Jeremiah Smith, though, as the number one recruit in the country, as a guy that I think we believe will start for the Buckeyes in 2024 as a true freshman, does 500 receiving yards seem reasonable to you?
Yeah, it does. if you're like us and believe he's going to start or like play starter reps, right? He's not on the field first, but we're talking about a guy who's going to be maybe not even with Emeka Ibuka, but I would think even or better than everyone else in the receiver room when it comes to total snaps played. Yeah. So 500 doesn't sound crazy to me. I'm trying to remember Garrett Wilson's season that got him close to that, and I feel like it was kind of like a slow build, right? Like maybe he wasn't all that heavily featured early on in the season. Maybe I'm misremembering. It was a couple of years ago, but I don't think for a guy who's going to play as much as we think he's going to play that 500 is unreasonable. Might even frankly be a little low if he's as good as we think he is. Like that seems like a target that is well within reach. 2019, Garrett Wilson was fourth on the team in receiving yards behind Chris Olave, who led the team, KJ Hill, Ben Victor.
Yeah.
That dynamic doesn't really exist to me on this roster, right? So like it's Emeka Ibuka probably we think is going to lead the team in receiving, and then if you say that Jeremiah Smith is going to be second instead of Carnell Tate, like I'll absolutely buy that.
And you know that was still in that era where they were rotating guys more, you know, as they did in 17, 18, and still kind of in 19, and then you know the last couple of years they've fallen into more of a thing where, you know, I mean, right. They used to play six receivers and they don't play six receivers right now, at least when your receivers are, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Ibuka quality. And that's what we think. Like if we're guessing right now, is our guess that it's kind of like a four-man thing with Emeka Ibuka, Carnell Tate, Jeremiah Smith, and Brandon Innes working into some degree? Is that what our guess is right now?
Yeah, that would be my guess. Maybe a Jaden Ballard makes that a five-man thing, but those are the four in my head right now. Yeah.
And like, you know, that if Innes is mostly in the slot, then that allows Emeka to be slot and outside at times and move around based on matchups. And do we think that Emeka Ibuka is going to move around the field this year? I know you know, we were talking the other day and you were saying that, you know, you thought the slot snaps for Marvin Harrison Jr. might even, and him moving around last year, it might even be greater than it wound up being. Do you think Emeka's everywhere in 2024?
Yeah, I do. Part of that too, I think, because you got to get Brandon Ennis on the field, and he's probably more of a slot receiver. So yeah, I think Emeka move around.
Yeah. Okay. But like, is this even wild to be like, I think Jeremiah Smith's going to have 500 receiving yards. Does that qualify, or am I missing the mark with the parameters of our discussion here?
I mean, you're still saying he's going to have a better freshman season than Garrett Wilson, Chris Carter, and who was Ted Ginn Jr. So like, when you put it that way, then yeah, it's pretty bold. I think pretty wild.
I don't want to slow play it. You know, like I want to be bold. I want to be wild.
I mean, you can say he's going to have a 1,000-yard season if you want to. No, you want to do that?
I mean, like it is. I like the exercise of trying to go through before a season, set a number, like figure out how many yards you think the offense is going to have, and then try to figure out how they're dispersed. And I haven't done that yet because it's only February, but digging into the nitty-gritty of that is going to be interesting, partly because of the thing that we're going to talk about now, which is you are, is it safe to say, very enthused about Ohio State's potential rushing attack. How wild do you think it could be in 2024?
Enthused is probably an understatement, and I'm ready to be let down by my high expectations. I'm so enthused that I think Ohio State's going to lead the Power Five in rushing in 2024. How's that land for you?
Yeah, like it lands. I want them to throw the ball like 92% of the time. So like, I have to get past that, but that's what I've thought in the past based on what was happening with personnel and health and the players they had on the field. But for this team, like, I don't know that there's anybody watching or listening who would be like, Oh no. Like, first, do you think you want them to do that? Is that how you want them to attack? I think most Ohio State fans would be in on that. And then B, if they're going to attack defenses that way, do they have the capability to do it? And probably, yeah, right?
Yeah, I think so. If I didn't think they had the personnel for it, I wouldn't predict it. Like a large part of this is the arrival of Chip Kelly and what I think he wants to do and is capable of, and his track record the last couple of years at UCLA. But it's about the personnel too. Like, it's Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson. It's Will Howard's ability to run the ball from the quarterback position. It's Ryan Day, which I thought, like, we didn't talk much about after his press conference a couple weeks ago, but I actually thought it was like a pretty big deal that he said it, that like, it's like a non-negotiable now that the quarterback has to present a run threat. Not that the quarterback has to run the ball a bunch of times per game, but he has to be accounted for, I think, is the way that Ryan Day said it when talking about Will Howard's running ability. And then he went further and he said, I think everybody in the room has that. And I don't know if that was prioritized like really at all prior to this year. They've certainly had some guys about whom that was true, but I don't think it's ever been the point where Ryan, I don't think it's ever been at the point where Ryan Day would say like, oh yeah, every guy in the room we have right now, like has some kind of element of that.
Would you say three of the last four starting quarterbacks did not have that? That Dwayne Haskins, CJ Stroud, and Kyle McCord would not have qualified as a guy that you have to account for?
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
So what do you think that is?
Like, understanding what it takes to be an efficient rushing team in college football. And I said this when we were having the incessant CJ Stroud conversation. Like, there are certainly teams that run the ball well that don't have a running quarterback, but it just makes life a whole lot easier when you do. And I think that Ryan Day, I think, has always known that. And maybe he's just embracing it a little more. And this is not I don't think this is a shift that happened this offseason. I think when you saw him add like a Devin Brown and a Lincoln Keenholz, guys that had some movement ability among their most desirable traits, I suppose, I thought that it was heading in this direction. But and even like Julian saying, you wouldn't say like, oh, that guy's a running quarterback, but he can move around. Like, watch his high school tape. Like, he's a pretty good athlete, can extend plays, can threaten you running the ball if called upon to do so. And I guess like, I don't know. I guess you could say that any quarterback can do that as long as you're willing to try it with them. But I don't think it's quite that simple. But I do believe him, and I agree with him when I like look at the room and think like, yeah, everyone in there has got a little something to them. So that was part of this for me too. But I just think like they're going to throw the ball, right? Not running the ball well does not mean, you know, abandoning the passing game. I think maybe the offense could look a little bit more like 2019, and like part of that is the balance conversation, which I understand is not the most interesting conversation in the world, but I really do think Ryan Day wants it, and like they didn't have it last year. Last year was by far their fewest rushing yards per game. They were over 200, like well over 200 in Ryan Day's first 2 years. I think they were like 190 and 180 in the third and fourth year. And then last year they were like 130. Mm. And I think that's much lower than they want to be. And when I say like lead the Power Five in rushing, this doesn't have to be 300 yards per game. West Virginia led the Power Five in rushing last year at 228 yards per game. And Chip Kelly at UCLA the last 3 years, 10th in the Power Five, 3rd in the Power Five, 5th in the Power Five. And I'm using yards per game. Ohio State, I don't think, has been in the top 10 since it was number 2 in – or not – sorry, it hasn't been in the top 5 since it was number 2 in 2019.
Yeah.
Behind Kentucky.
Did you think about making this wild prediction, Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins each run for 1,000 yards?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one – and I even when we talked to Quinshon Judkins, I talked to him about this idea. 2017 Georgia, Nick Chubb 1,345 yards, Sony Michel 1,227 yards. I mean, it's one of those things again. It's like, hey, what's the comparison? The greatest two-headed running combination in college football in the last 25 years. But I don't think it's out of the question to use that as some kind of comparison for what these two guys could be. And then that becomes a function of not just their ability to run the ball, but do they divide it that equally? Mm-hmm. Did you just think leading the Power Five in rushing was a bolder, wilder prediction, or did you pull yourself back from the edge of 2,000 yard rushers because you thought maybe it wouldn't happen?
I thought that saying they're going to lead the Power Five in rushing would like land differently given how poorly they ran the ball last year, yeah, and how much of a conversation this has been for frankly the last 3 years, even when they were up closer to 200 rushing yards per game and like in 2022 and 2021. I don't think people were particularly happy with how Ohio State ran the ball, maybe a little bit early on in Travion Henderson's freshman year, but like from the second half of that year really through the end of last year, I don't think people have been happy with the way that Ohio State's run the ball. So I thought that saying like, oh yeah, well now they're gonna flip that and lead the Power Five in rushing, sounded a little more bold than saying, yeah, these two really good running backs, the one guy who's led the Power Five in rushing in the last 2 years, they're both going to run for 1,000 yards.
Okay. So I'm going to build off that idea. And then again, we made our two lists separately, but these were kind of connected to each other. So I was trying to make a statistical case here, and I couldn't figure out the right stats to do it. So my wild prediction is just that Ohio State will run the ball well in short yardage. Like, is that, I think that's wild enough because it's kind of been maybe the number one thing that we've talked about them doing poorly since the second half of the Michigan game in 2021. So like dispensing and dispatching with the thing that has been your bugaboo, your Achilles heel. It's like, oh no, that thing they were terrible at, they'll be great at it. Okay. I think that's wild enough. And it's connected to what you're saying, but I think to me, this has to mean that the quarterback is involved there. And so this is just, what are you going to run on 3rd and 2? What are you going to run on 4th and 1? Some kind of read play where maybe Will Howard will keep it. Maybe he'll hand it to Quinshon Judkins. And just the threat of either of those two things happening and then having like two physical dudes that you think can get that yard. Is this a gimme? Like, is this wild enough, or is the fact that they've been kind of terrible at it mean, yeah, no, this is good.
No, this is not a gimme, because part of it, it's like there's like a schematic element too. It's like Ryan Day's ideas on how to get short yardage have sort of just been like, can you just line up and move them, please? Which is like not unreasonable, I suppose.
Not when you're Ohio State,
but,
right?
That's a reason. But not entirely effective, and I think all of us, you know, kind of felt that watching it, and like it sort of ran counter to the thing that Ryan Day has said multiple times, which is like, you're not going to keep running your head into a wall. Like, well, it kind of feels like you are. So they have to figure that stuff out. And so I think this is a great prediction to think that to project that they will. And again, it goes, I think it dovetails nicely with what I was just saying, but it's the personnel stuff too. Like and it's the quarterback, I think. Like it's having maybe Quinshon Judkins more than Travion Henderson. Like, I don't think Travion Henderson is a tremendous short yardage running back. At least like not a guy who's going to like get to the line of scrimmage, run over a defender and then get you the half yard you need to get a first down. I think Quinshon Judkins is more of that guy, but I like the presence of Will Howard, I think elevates the possibilities here too. So I'm on board with you. I think they will be better. I don't know. There's not a great, well, if you have like the advanced stats stuff, we don't have access to that at the moment, but I can tell you like last year on rushing attempts on third and three or fewer to go, they had 29 of them and they got 19 first downs. And then 19 first downs just like sort of cumulatively were like toward the bottom end of the country.
So to me, it's just like for fans watching on TV, sitting in the stands, when it's third and two, when it's fourth and one, do you feel good about Ohio State's chances? Or are you like, oh my God, I can't. Cause like for two seasons plus, it's been like, oh, like this, you're nervous as an Ohio State fan. So just if that leaves your body. The thing that we have not talked about really in either of these two conversations about rushing is the offensive line. How important, I guess, specifically in the short yardage conversation, but generally, do you think having a veteran center like Seth McLaughlin is for what they need to do? And having a veteran center versus a first-year starter last year as a second-year player, Carson Hinsman, what does that do just for the rest of the interior of the offensive line when you have a dude who's been around in there?
Yeah, I think it's really helpful, obviously. And it's not just that Seth McLaughlin, I think, is like a bigger, stronger, more mature athlete at the moment than Carson Hinsman is, although that helps too. But I think the depth of experience there, like, just kind of gives you more to lean on in those situations, like identifying things, like understanding proper leverage, like all that stuff. So I think it's incredibly helpful. And it's not, you have it at center, you have it at left guard with Donovan Jackson, who's now played a lot of football. And if it ends up being that Josh Fryer is your right guard, like Josh Fryer is not as far less experienced than the other two, but like he's got a full season full of starts under his belt too. So like I would feel pretty good about the interior of the offensive line's ability to more consistently create that space that you're talking about than they would have been the last couple of years.
All right, let's get off rushing. Let's get to special teams. Again, another thing that if just the whole part of it is like Ohio State fans go from to that's progress. What's your next one?
My next one is that Ohio State will successfully execute a fake punt. I'm not gonna drill down and say when or the situation, or although I guess it will be fourth down. If they execute a fake punt on third down, we'll talk about it at the time. I was trying to think the last time they've done it. Like, I know they had the play against Rutgers a couple of years ago when Jesse Mercer ran and then Ryan Day and Greg Schiano wanted to fight each other, but that wasn't a designed fake punt. That was like a check based off the look that happened.
Right.
So I think the last time they've executed a fake punt was in 2019 in Ryan Day's first year in the Big Ten championship against Wisconsin. They were down 14-0 in the second quarter. Fourth and nine. I went back and watched it this morning. Drew Crispin catches a snap, rolls out, and throws it to Luke Farrell for a first down. And like that got Ohio State back into the game, and they won the Big Ten championship. And we all thought they were going to lose that game at the time.
Wow, that sounds very exciting. Wow.
I don't know that they've executed one since then. Obviously, they very publicly tried against Michigan and Georgia in 2022. But part of the reason I am predicting this is just to say that, like, I think they're going to be better on special teams. I think they're going to be more organized on special teams. And I think they're going to be more aggressive on special teams, because I think that's how Ryan Day is going to, I think we said it before, is like going to kind of scratch the itch that he can't scratch anymore as the offensive play caller. And we don't know exactly what the dynamic's going to be. We talked with Mac O'Reilly, the new safeties coach, on Tuesday, and he said he's going to have a hand in special teams. There's no one on the staff currently that has a special teams coordinator title, but Mac O'Reilly said he's going to be doing some of that. They still have to hash some of that out. But Ryan Day, based off what he told us, like, wants to be more involved with it than he has been at any time prior in his head coaching career. And I'm thinking that leads them to being a little more creative on special teams. They have to like be sound, I think, before they can start messing around with the fun stuff, and they have not been particularly sound on special teams. So maybe I'm off and like the fun stuff will come next year after they figure that all that out. But I think they're going to try a thing or two on special teams. So I'm calling for them to execute a fake punt here this year.
I mean, Ryan Day is a schemer. And if this is where he gets to scheme the most now, like they might do like three fake punts a game.
Yeah, maybe. But do you agree with that? Like that Ryan Day might try to do a little bit of that, you know, in the absence of calling plays for the offense?
So, yes, I do agree with that. And I like the idea of a head coach being really locked in on special teams, on the specifics and the strategy of special teams in the moment. And certainly Ryan Day would have been involved with that before. But when you have a special teams coach and you have a head coach who has the offensive play sheet in his hand, you know, like Parker Fleming was the guy who was in charge of having them ready to run a fake punt against Michigan. Clearly it's like Ryan Day's decision, right? And I don't even know, like, in that moment what exactly the process is of like Parker Fleming saying like I think we've got to look here, I think there's an opportunity for this, or Ryan Day saying like, hey man, we need to try something here, do you think we can get it? But if Ryan Day just owns those decisions more and then owns the specificity of executing it, yeah, I'm all for it. And again, Ohio State's done this in the past where it's like four different assistant coaches each get 1/4 of the special teams. Maybe they'll do it that way. Maybe they'll be in a spot where like Matt Guerrieri deals with both kickoff teams and Keenan Bailey or somebody like that deals with both punt teams. But Ryan Day, as what he has said, is like the overseer of that and really having his hands on that. I don't think he can help but have it lead to more aggressive special teams. And then you also hope what matters more is better execution when you are aggressive.
Yeah. And that can, maybe that's not in the form of a fake punt. Maybe that's like, they're better at blocking kicks or whatever. I don't know. Or actually try to return kicks in a way that's threatening to the other team. There's a number of ways that could take shape, but I do think they are going to be a little more aggressive with it this year.
All right, so let's stay with Ryan Day decision-making here. And this is one that I think, this would be as bad of a big a decision that he could make, and it's to shave his beard. Mm. This is my way of saying this would be, it's like shaving the burden off. It's like, and like maybe even like, I don't know that you would have Chip Kelly do it. Like if you went in like to an old time barber place and Ryan Day sat down, remember when they had the thing when Urban Meyer had the video game controller and he handed it to Ryan Day? If you had Ryan Day walk in with the beard and then you had Chip Kelly like shake out the thing and like put it over Ryan Day. And when he put it around his neck, like the thing said, like, you have a play caller now. And then Chip's going this. It's like, hey, what do you want to do on 3rd and 3? And Ryan Day is just relaxed, right? That's what this symbolizes to me. Because as we have noted, and Mike, we can bring, like, the man was a baby. He was a baby when he took over as a head coach. And now he's a man. And just shave that off. Just shave away the burden. Shave away the responsibility of having to do everything all the time. If he came out, right? What if he came out just one day on a Tuesday or one day on a game day and was clean shaven? Don't you think people would go crazy and then try to analyze what it meant? Because my gosh, man, it's like two different people with those pictures.
If he came out with no beard, like on the first day of camp or the first day of spring practice, it's all we talk about.
Yeah.
I don't know what that says about us, but it's all we talk about if he decided to do that. I will say this. We for people watching on YouTube, we put the side-by-side there of Ryan Day clean shaven. Well, a little bit of maybe 5 o'clock shadow, but certainly not the full beard, and then Ryan Day with the full beard. The hairline's still strong, still consistent. Like for as stressful as the job is, like good for him for keeping that thing going.
Yeah, no, he's got, I mean, he looks good with both, but as with everything, right? I mean, people love to talk about the aging process. I put up like a photo of, or put up a video of like me and you and Ari after the Fiesta Bowl loss in 2016, talking about how Ohio State should hire Chip Kelly. And all anybody said was like, man, look at the hair. It's like, yes, we have aged from 2016 to 2024 as well. Yeah. But like the burden of this, I'm just like, I am. we had this discussion on the, at the Roosters show the other day, right? It's the idea of this is obviously big for Ryan Day. When you have three straight losses to Michigan, when you have as good of a team as this team is with everybody who stayed, everybody they brought in, you know, whether you want to call it pressure or expectation or whatever, right? There's a lot of opportunity ahead. So in that way, there a burden remains. But I just think the bigger one is like the day-to-day detailed responsibility of, do you feel like you have three jobs? And with Chip Kelly coming in, I think that really, right? There's two kinds of burdens in life. There's sort of like the big picture thinking about life and like, oh my gosh. And then there's the like, I've got to empty the dishwasher. I've got to help my kids with their homework. I've got to shovel the snow. I've got to cook dinner. I've got to go to work. I've got, right? And we end up talking a lot, I think, in sports about the big picture pressures of like, oh, you got to beat Michigan. But I just think what really can wear you down is feeling like you don't have enough hours in the day to do everything you want to do. And I feel like that is going to be significantly lessened, which means he'll have time to shave his beard.
It's great. Shaving your beard can be very therapeutic, too. Yeah. I have not done it in a long time because the last time I did it, my wife got very mad at me. She wasn't my wife at the time. I thought we were going to break up.
Whoa.
I shaved my beard. Yeah. She was very upset.
Wow.
Have you ever had a beard? Have you ever rocked a beard before?
Yeah. I actually was looking at it. It was maybe like, 10 years ago, actually 2014 season, because, when I shaved it off, in pieces and took pictures at various stages. And there's one photo of me with like a big bushy, like, Anchorman mustache. That makes me look like the cops are coming to like knock on my door in 5 seconds. So on the 10th anniversary of that, it's in December, I think 2024, I will share that photo because it is unbelievable. So it's been 10 years since I had a beard. Yeah. But you just trim your beard? You never, but do you have to shave up on your cheeks? Like, do you get
I have to shave like up here and like around my mustache and like my neck and stuff too. But like, I used to try to trim my own beard and it never came out right. So I just like go every 2 weeks and let the barber do it.
Oh, let Chip Kelly shave your beard.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember that was like a big thing. Like when it was like, hey, they got a barber's chair, like in the Woody, that was a thing.
Yeah.
Like, what if you had Chip Kelly work in the barber's chair? How therapeutic would that be for everybody?
It's a good skill to have, being able to cut hair too. I wonder if you can.
I like, I do the electric razor, but every now and then, like every couple of weeks, I like getting out and putting the foam on and doing the blade and just get a closer shave. It just feels like a nice close shave. Just perks you up, man. Oh,
yeah.
I really think he's going to do it. Like this started off as like, hey, do a beard thing to kind of break up the football talk. I have really talked myself into this, both like therapeutically and just like, cause it feels good, brother. All right.
I think then we need to turn that into some content, and it's you and Ryan Day side by side in barber's chairs, mic'd up, just talking about life and unburdening yourselves as he's getting his entire beard shaved off, and you're just getting a little, you know, a little cleanup.
And Chip Kelly is shaving his beard, and you are shaving my beard.
Yeah, sure. We'll bring Billy Davis back. He can shave your beard. He might Sweeney Todd it, but.
No, for real though. For real. You know that, right? One of the highlights for me in 20 years almost of doing this is writing like a very critical piece of Bill Davis at the Rose Bowl in 2018 and talking with him for that story and talking about how like I did not think he did a very good job as an Ohio State assistant coach. And then I wrote the story, and then the word was relayed to me that he said, "You're right." Like he knew he didn't do that great of a job here at Ohio State. Like that wasn't the right fit for him. So I'm only saying that because I think if Bill Davis was shaving my beard, he would not kill me. There might be other coaches who would. I know that there's a few that would, but not him. Okay.
Okay.
Quick break. When we come back, 5 more wild predictions for Ohio State in the 2024 college football season. We'll do it next on Kings of Columbus. Back on Kings of Columbus, wild predictions for Ohio State in 2024. A guy that we talked about the other day, Landis, and I'm eager to hear you talk about him again. It's Jelani Thurman. What do you think he's going to do this season?
Yeah, maybe this doesn't qualify as all that wild or bold here, but I am saying that Jelani Thurman will play 400-plus snaps. this season. And we did have a really good conversation, I think, about what this could look like during the Rooster Show on Monday. And I don't know that my mind was changed, because I was already of the mind that I think Jelani should play a lot this year. I think what you were saying would help like further reinforce that belief. Like I really do think, even if Will Kaczmarek is a number one tight end, and I think there's reason to believe that he will be, I think Jelani is tight end two, or should be. I think Chip Kelly wants to play a lot with two tight ends. There is some precedent under Ryan Day of playing a second year tight end this many snaps. Jeremy Ruckert played over 400 snaps in his second season at Ohio State. He played a little bit as a true freshman too. Jelani Thurman did not play very much at all as a true freshman, which would make this like a tremendous leap in playing time, which I think I would hope qualifies as wild then. But I don't know. I have a hard time seeing Ohio State keep a player that seems to be like as unique physically as Jelani is just kind of cooling on the bench for a second year. And maybe like a fresh set of eyes with someone like Chip Kelly can help push them to the point where they embrace more the idea of playing a guy who, like, maybe he's not 100% ready. I don't know that he is. It's a hard position to play. There's a lot of development involved, and typically Ohio State has kind of waited until you're capable of doing everything they want you to do before they put you out there. But I don't think they have to do that. And I would hope if Jelani is in that position that they don't do that. So I'm going to be optimistic here and predict that he's going to be a big part of this offense next year.
So I do think one of the things when we talk about 12 personnel for Ohio State is, how comfortable are you taking one of the three receivers off the field to create that opportunity, right? And there mm-hmm. are times here when it's like, well, like, what were you going to – who are you going to take off the field when you have Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Jackson Smith and Jigba? Why would you ever go 12, right? What are you talking about? Like, that doesn't – you've got to have those guys in the field. In this situation, if you want to put Jelani Thurman on the field as a second tight end – what you're doing, he's a second-year player. You're either going to take second-year Carnell Tate, who has not played that much, second-year Brandon Ennis, who hasn't played at all, or first-year Jeremiah Smith off the field. So now you have two tight ends, and you have Emeka Ebuka and then one other receiver. I think that is part of the discussion, too, because don't you think that Jelani Thurman could get snaps kind of as a slot receiver? That yes, sometimes they're in 12 personnel where they have two tight ends with their hands on the ground on the ends of the line. And other times they have a 12 personnel package. And then all of a sudden it's a Mecca and Carnell Tate out wide. And it's Jelani Thurman lined up in the slot as a mismatch. And that's a and then it's just like, go run a route against a small safety and make a catch like a receiver. Right. I mean, I think there's multiple ways that he would almost play two positions this year that could help him get to this number of snaps.
Yeah, I think so. You're making me want to go look now and see how often Jeremy Ruckert was playing like in the slot.
Yep.
I don't know. Here it is. So in line 290 and in the slot 85.
Okay.
So like that's, but I think that's kind of what we're talking about, right? Like, it's not – if Jeremy Ruckert is a true sophomore, had to be your every down in-line blocking tight end, like, I don't think that would have gone very well. And I don't know that it would go very well for Jelani Thurman this year if he had to do that. But Will Kaczmarek is your in-line tight – it's still Farrell, Ruckert. Kaczmarek is Farrell, Thurman is Ruckert. Like, we've said that a couple times now. I think that's an easy shorthand for people. They know what we mean when we say that. But, yeah, I think you can move Jelani around the formation quite a bit if you wanted to. He was essentially a high school receiver. Like, it's not like he'd be uncomfortable. I understand that, like, playing high school football and playing in the Big Ten aren't the same thing, but it's not like you could throw him out there, you know, split out by himself, and he would be like, "Well, what is this? I don't know what to do when I'm out here." Like, he's done that before, at least at some level of football. So I think he could handle it if you sprinkled that in some. And he's just like, 6'5". 250 and moves incredibly well. Like, why would you not like weaponize that guy within your offense? And I think that they will. Like, Ryan Day, I think, clearly wants to play a decent amount of 12 personnel when he has the guys to do it. And in a normal offensive season for Ohio State, especially if they're going to be playing, you know, 14, 15, 16 games, 400 snaps is like 25% of the offense, right? We're not talking about doing it half the time. So it's a big number for a sophomore tight end, I guess, historically here. But I don't think it's unreasonable given the talents that I think Jelani has.
Yeah, I like this one a lot. And if it's wishful thinking, right, this is the kind of wishful thinking. This is what we do in the offseason. The offseason is for finding players that you like and making cases for them to play. And so I think there's a lot of people watching and listening to this who are like, yeah, no, I want to see Jelani Thurman. And I do think just the structure of the personnel on the team would help lead to this as well. And so it's one of those things, right? If you're going to go 12 personnel on third and two, and you want to run the ball in the ways that we just talked about previously about how well this team might run, Jelani Thurman has to be able to make the block so that it's not the guy he's supposed to be in charge of that makes the tackle on third and two. So that's where he has to get to. But man, can you imagine, right? Like you line up with seven guys tight on the line of scrimmage on third and two, and then all of a sudden Jelani Thurman stands up and motions out into the slot when the defense is in like a heavy run stop jumbo package. People would freak out, right?
Like some linebacker's got to cover him. Yeah. It's the worst day of his life. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, if that's the reality that you can get to, that he can be a good enough blocker that you can legitimately run the ball on third and two with him in the game. And then that creates the opportunities. What can he do off of that? We just don't know if he's going to get there as a blocker. I do think sometimes with players like this, right, on the outside, we are excited about upside, and the coaches more often are making determinations about playing time on the basics, on can you be relied upon? Do your 1/11th, you know, do you do the grunt work? And if you can't make the block, then we're going to put in G Scott, or we're going to put in somebody else at tight end who can do it, or we're going to put in Luke Montgomery as a, you know, sixth offensive lineman. And like, you guys can have all your fanciful stuff, but you've got to be able to make the block that you need to make on third and two.
I want fanciful stuff.
I know.
Isn't fanciful fun?
Fanciful is what the offseason is for.
Yeah.
The most, that'd be a good one. Like, we're looking for offseason content. The most fanciful, Jelani's had the most fanciful, although fanciful applying it to the player is, makes it sound like it's like Jelani. I don't want to walk up to Jelani Thurman and say, you are fanciful, because that's not what the point is. It's that his abilities create fanciful ideas in us. Mm-hmm. So my number one fanciful guy is 2013 Dontre Wilson as a true freshman. That was like, what if you motion Dontre Wilson out, then you put him in a cannon and shoot him out of a cannon? Would that be a good play? And Urban Meyer at Big Ten Media Days that year was like, yeah, that actually would be a good play. I think we will shoot him out of a cannon. And we were all like, oh my God, they're going to shoot him out of a cannon. And then it was like, he played a little bit, but he never got to like where we imagined he might get to. But if we did like the 10 guys in the last 20 years of Ohio State football, the last 10 years of Ohio State football, that allowed you to have the most fanciful thoughts in the offseason, I think Jelani Thurman is high on that list, because he's Northern Darnell Washington, and it just makes you go crazy.
Yeah, he's unique. That would be a fun list to put together. Maybe we should do that.
Fanciful, writing it down. All right, this is not fanciful at all. It's linebacker topic. It's Cody Simon. My next wild prediction is that Cody Simon will have 100+ tackles. And so this is like, having 100 tackles is not a thing that Ohio State has all the time, but Tommy Eichenberg was second in the Big Ten in tackles with 120 in 2022. And, you know, there's a bunch of years previous to that where like Ohio State's leading tackler did not have 100 tackles. In 2023, Ohio State's leading tackler was Eichenberg. He had 82. So basically this is, can Cody Simon in 2024 have something in the ballpark of Tommy Eichenberg's 2022 season, when we were like all going crazy about what a fit he was for this Jim Knowles defense? This is a function both of playing time and how much of a rock he is going to be in the middle of that defense, as we imagine all these things around him with Sonny Styles and Caleb Downs and CJ Hicks and all these things. This is an expression of that Cody Simon will be on the field all the time and involved all the time. Does this sound not wild? Is this too wild? What do you think of Cody Simon 100+ tackles?
I mean, like in terms of sheer production, it's a little wild because this doesn't happen very much anymore. Like you said, Tommy did it 2 years ago. I think he was the first guy since Joshua Perry to have 100 tackles, or maybe Raekwon McMillan. But it had been a number of years before Tommy did it that Ohio State had a 100 tackle season, I think.
Raekwon. Raekwon got there in both. So Perry led them with 100 tackles in the national title year in 14. Raekwon got there in both 15 and 16. And then they didn't have anybody with 100 tackles until Tommy in 2022. So it's not it's not an every year occurrence.
Yeah. Well, I think that's linebackers too, because I think Ronnie Hickman might have had it the year before.
He had 98, but, I think, the one.
Oh, did he? Okay. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, it's not a common occurrence anymore. It's like hard. Like, long gone are the days when linebackers are putting up 300 tackles in a season, right? That's why, like, Ohio State's career tackle numbers, like, well, no one will ever sniff them because they're like, Chris Spielman has 10,000 career tackles. Right. So, this does feel bold to me. And But I do think you're right that Cody will kind of be the mainstay there. At least I got that impression from talking with James Laurinaitis on Tuesday. Like, he seems very high on Cody. He said he wished he would have played Cody more last year, which is like kind of, it was funny to hear him say, I wish I would have played Cody more last year. I was like, oh, were you the linebackers coach last year? You were making those decisions.
I mean, Austin was like that when it was like, oh, I sent out the Rooster show. It was like, hey, Jim Zorres is a linebackers coach. And he was like, he was already the linebackers coach.
And there's like a weird dynamic in that room. So Cody Simon has played 1,059 snaps at linebacker, and I think the rest of the room combined has 100.
He needs
to play a lot, if only to give them someone who kind of knows what he's doing out there. But I thought he was really good last year. I thought he was their best linebacker last year. I think he is capable of a season like this if he is given a workload similar to what Tommy Eichenberg was given two years ago. And frankly, even last year, like I think Tommy played like 600 something snaps last year, which is I think double what Cody Simon played. If Cody Simon does that, I think he is certainly capable of getting 100 tackles.
Who's the backup, Mike?
Gabe Powers, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's part. It's like it's that we're not sure, right? So like, the idea that like Cody Simon just may not come off the field, and does Knowles and Laurinaitis love him? So that's part of this too, because that was, it was just Cody Simon's had such an interesting career, because like there was a time right where like he basically beat Tommy Eichenberg out for that job, and then kind of Eichenberg came back, and then Knowles loved Eichenberg, and that 2022 season, that meshing of coach and player was awesome, and Cody Simon just got left behind a little bit, but then last year, he probably had a better year than Tommy Eichenberg, even though Tommy Eichenberg was the starter. Like Cody Simon has been a pretty darn good player for a long time at Ohio State, but this feels like his first real opportunity to like be the guy, and he might be really, really, really good.
Yeah, he was part of the 2021 defense and 2021 linebacker core in particular. Just weren't very good. They were pretty young. They got beat up. They got pushed around against Michigan. But I thought Cody was good in 2022, kind of like as the Sam, like third linebacker role whenever they put him out there. And then they put more on his plate last year, and he delivered even more. So why wouldn't you think he would continue on that trend if they give him, you know, meaningful starter reps for the entirety of the season? Like I definitely think he will.
All right. Defensive thing for you here with number 8 on our wild predictions.
Yeah. I'm buying the Jack Sawyer hype a little bit. I'm buying the momentum off of the end of last season. And I'm going to say that he will have Ohio State's first double digit sack season since Chase Young in 2019. And it is kind of remarkable to me that they have not sniffed double digit sacks.
Not sniffed.
Chase Young had 16 and a half in 2019. COVID year 2020, only 8 games. Jonathan Cooper had 3.5 to lead the team. Haskell Garrett led the team with 5.5 in 2021. Sawyer and Mike Hall led the team with 4.5 in 2022. And Sawyer led the team with 3.5 last year, and 3 of those came in the last game of the year.
That's a typo. How can that be? Right? That is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Like they've the pass rush production has suffered, and I think part of it, like people will tell you, is like changes in the sport. I guess like quarterbacks are a little harder to sack. I think generally sack numbers are down across college football. But even with that being said, and that's true, like if people have done the research on it, sacks are down. That Ohio State, the closest Ohio State has come to having double-digit sacks in the last 5 years is Jack Sawyer ripping off three in the bowl game so that he could have 6.5 last year is still pretty startling. But I think that Jack is on a serious upward trajectory based off, and it's not just the Cotton Bowl. It's like the second half of the season building up to the Cotton Bowl where he was like kind of unblockable. I think he had something like 30 pressures like in his last like 6 games or 7 games. If you look at the PFF stats, and I just felt like you felt him. You felt his presence consistently, I think, week after week in the second half of last season in a way that I just don't know that we felt from an Ohio State defensive end in a couple of years. Like, JT Tuimoloau has had incredible games. Like, the spikes have been unbelievable. But I don't even know if you felt him game after game after game the same way you felt Jack game after game after game in the second half of last season. And I think he'll build on top of that. I'm wondering if, like, if Jim Knowles might try to like harness that a little bit and be a little more direct with the way that he uses Jack, like to try to get him more sacks because he seems to have turned a corner. So it's a lot, right? Like 10 sacks is not easy to come by. I'm not trying to say that, but if anyone has been positioned, I think, to go after that number since Chase Young, it feels like it's Jack Sawyer coming off of the way he played last year.
In 2019, Chase Young was one of 5 Big Ten players to have double-digit sacks. Do you know how many total Big Ten players there have been with double-digit sacks in the 4 seasons since? And will 2020, the COVID year, there were none because there weren't enough games. But the other 3 seasons, how many total do you think?
6.
4. So yeah. Like that's so there was one last year, who was Nick Skirton from Purdue. There was one in 2022, which is Nick Herbig from Wisconsin. And in 2021, it was just the Michigan guys, Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojabo. So it is a high goal. I think you make a good point about the way the game has changed, but it's time. But with all of that, like, shouldn't Ohio State have the guy who leads the Big Ten in sacks? Like, yeah, that's not a crazy thing to think, right?
If there's one guy, like, why wouldn't that guy be at Ohio State, right?
Yeah. Why is it a Wisconsin guy? Yeah. Why is it like it should be an Ohio State guy? So, Jack is going to be fascinating to watch this season because there's a chance, right? There's a chance that, well, we've been waiting for the next guy. And JT is just a different kind of player. I think we can all agree on that. Like, it's not a criticism of JT Tuimoloau at all, but he's not in the Bosa Bosa Young mold, right? He's the Cam Hayward mold
of defense, mold, yeah.
Is a tremendous mold. But like, what if Jack in year 4, it's like, hey, the Bosa Bosa Young legacy, where has that been? It's like, there it is. Like, that's kind of what you're saying, right? That like, what if he looks like the third Bosa brother? Like, that's a super high bar.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're saying.
It's a version of what's out there, I think. But even like, I don't know, like he can be Sam Hubbard. Like, you know, like it's not.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's a level below being the third Bosa brother.
Tyquan Lewis was really good. Be that.
Yeah. That is still an incredibly high level of play that you just like came to expect every week from the defensive end position that I just don't know that we've seen, or like, it's less apparent, I guess. These guys have been really good against the run, which I always try to make a point of when we're having this discussion, but like, we know what it looks like when a guy is like terrorizing an offensive line and really getting after it and teams have to adjust to them because you can't block them. And like, high time that Ohio State threw a guy out there who made offenses feel that way.
Yeah. All right. My last wild prediction is, it just is kind of a weird one. And I wanted to make sure we brought this conversation to this show because you and I had a version of this conversation on Kings of the North as we talked about Nebraska and Ohio State and over under win totals this year. So for this Ohio State audience, this wild prediction is that when Nebraska visits the Shoe on October 26th, Nebraska will be undefeated and Ohio State will not be undefeated. This would be Nebraska at 7-0 based off an easy schedule. They have, they have Colorado in the non-conference and a couple other easy games. And then it's just like kind of the bottom half of the league is the beginning of their Big Ten schedule. And this is Ohio State has to go to Oregon before this Nebraska game. And this is just an acknowledgement that, like, that is going to be an incredibly difficult trip. And so I haven't done the research on this yet of, like, Ohio State in regular season West Coast games. In my time here, I know they went out in 07 and beat Washington. And they also went out in 08 and got crushed by USC. So, like, mm-hmm. it's just like to go to the West Coast and do this, and then, like, just acknowledgement that Oregon's going to be really good. And it's like not a criticism of Ohio State. It's not an indication that Ohio State can't win the national title or can't win the Big Ten, but they just have a game that is four times harder than anything Nebraska has early in the season. So this is wild. Is like, would I bet my house on this? No, but I wanted to, like, sort of put it on the radar for Ohio State fans, because if Dylan Raiola is the Nebraska starting quarterback as a true freshman, the one-time Ohio State commit, as we all expect him to be, that's already going to make this like a huge game. Mm-hmm. And Matt Rhule makes big jumps in year two at programs, and Nebraska was 5-7 last year. And if that means, yeah, I took Nebraska, I think, over 8.5 wins on our Kings of the North Northern win total show, that very well might include a 7-0 start. So it's just like bracing yourself for this idea. It doesn't even, like, Nebraska won't be ranked ahead of Ohio State if this is the case. It's just kind of a weird little schedule wrinkle. And it would make for an awesome game, right? I mean, these are two gigantic fan bases that have a lot in common. I would love to see a lot of hype around an Ohio State Nebraska game.
We haven't had one. I was reminded of this as you were talking. So 2016, Nebraska came to Ohio Stadium as a top 10 team. It had just lost a week before to Wisconsin. So it was number 7. It lost to Wisconsin and fell to number 10. And then Ohio State beat them 62-3.
Was that was that like Tommy Armstrong was the quarterback and got hurt?
And he got hurt early in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think was that maybe freshman Adrian Martinez had the play? Is that maybe. Right?
Okay. That sounds right.
Yeah. No, I think which end of this do you feel more strongly about?
I probably feel more strongly about Nebraska's chances to be 7-0. I think just their schedule is so light that is very much legit. Yeah. I mean, like, can Ohio State go win at Oregon? Absolutely. Ohio State can go win at Oregon. So sure. I'm not like, oh, there's no way. I mean, and then that means we have an undefeated matchup, which would be holy moly, just like tremendous for late October. But this is also a reminder about the new you can lose style of college football, that if Ohio State and Oregon can play that game, both be ranked in the top 10, and the loser is fine. The loser is still on track for every one of its goals, and it's not disastrous. It's not an indication that you're not a good team. It's just kind of like life in an expanding, growing, improving conference. But also, man, are we just wishing it into existence that we want Nebraska to be back? I mean, again, if you guys are watching this and you don't come watch us on Kings of the North, we would just recommend that you try it. We have conversations like this about teams that matter in the North, right? 26 Northern teams that we talk about. It just would be fun for the Big Ten, for Northern college football, for college football in general, for Nebraska to matter again.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I like when Nebraska is relevant, a little bit that they have been since the late 90s. And I also I'm sure people don't like hearing like, hey, I think Ohio State's going to lose a game. Like, it's not unreasonable for two of the best, like, three teams in the country to go play. Like, one of them has to lose, right? So it's like,
yeah,
Ohio State has three very difficult games on its schedule this year. If it ends up dropping one of them, I don't think that would be terribly surprising. And it's certainly not the end of the world. In the 12-team playoff world. No, it would be the end of the world, I guess, if that one game is Michigan. But if it's at Oregon, if it's at Penn State, you won't like it at the time, but it doesn't derail the season.
And that's what we're talking about here. Like, we are operating under the assumption that going into the season, Ohio State and Georgia rightly should be viewed as the two best teams, and Oregon might be three. Is that a fair assessment of where we are?
I think it's Oregon or Texas, yeah.
So, yeah. Like, how awesome is that going to be to play potentially two of the best three teams in the country as a Big Ten matchup in October? Is going to be awesome. And just so, this is the Nebraska schedule that we're talking about here. UTEP, Colorado, Northern Iowa as their non-conference games. Illinois at Purdue, Rutgers at Indiana. So that's what that 7-0 could look like. So like it wouldn't really necessarily tell us a whole lot about Nebraska. We think Rutgers might be decent, but it's homecoming for Nebraska. It's at home. They should probably win that game. So anyway, just putting it on people's radars with a wild prediction. Let's do our last one. What is your final wild prediction, Landis?
My final wild prediction is that Ohio State will not allow a touchdown until October. So no touchdowns allowed in its first four games. They play one in August. They play three in September. The games are against Akron. Where do I have this written down? My notes are all out of order. I apologize. Akron, Western Michigan, Marshall. At Michigan State's the tricky one. And, like, I'm not saying they're going to post shutouts. Like, field goals are fine. I'm kind of using the way Michigan started last year as, like, my template for this. And Michigan did allow two touchdowns in its first four games against East Carolina, UNLV, Bowling Green, and Rutgers. One of those two touchdowns was with like 2 minutes left in the game, in the fourth quarter, in a game that Michigan was winning 35-0. So it was a pure garbage time touchdown that UNLV scored. But it still counts. It would still make my prediction wrong if that were to happen to Ohio State. But like, I just think this defense is going to be the best defense in the country. They were incredibly stingy last year, and they're going to be even more stingy this year. And like the first three games are like nothing burgers. Like there might be a shutout or two in those games. But I have a hard time seeing those teams scoring touchdowns against Ohio State. Ohio State's defense didn't give up many touchdowns to teams of that caliber last year. I think they gave up, I think it might have been three touchdowns in their first three games before they played Notre Dame, and they gave up two. And then Michigan State's the tricky one. Like, can you keep a potentially improved Michigan State team with like a potentially real quarterback and Aiden Childs off the board on the road? Maybe not. Maybe that's asking too much. But I wanted to figure out a way to say how good I thought this defense was going to be this year without like predicting they're going to have X number of shutouts. So I tweaked it and said they're not going to give up a touchdown in the first month of the season.
So a year ago at this time, I certainly know that I was spending a lot of time talking about like, hey, like watch out for Western Kentucky, right? Austin Reed at quarterback. That's a real thing. That's a team. That's a style of offense that wants to put up points. And then Western Kentucky last year scored 41 in its opener, scored 52 in week two, and then Ohio State beat Western Kentucky 63-10. Yeah. And so the three non-conference teams that you're talking about for Ohio State this year, there's nobody out there that would get you on alert the way Western Kentucky's offense would have a year ago. And Ohio State squashed Western Kentucky last year. And so like that idea, we both love Aiden Childs. We both are enthused about the Michigan State hire with Jonathan Smith, but Aiden Childs, you know, was like a little bit of a wrinkle quarterback, or, you know, played one series or at times last year as a true freshman at Oregon State behind DJ Uiagalelei, clear starter at Michigan State, but he's never been a starter before. And it's September.
Yeah.
So this is one of those where like Aiden Childs could be really good in 2024, and Michigan State could still lose to Ohio State 56-3 because they're just not, in the first month of a new coach tenure, they're not going to be ready for a team with seven guys on defense that could be in the NFL. So I like this.
Yeah. Where are you on the defense? Like going, do you think Ohio State has the best defense in the country coming back?
So this is like really hard because two of the flags you've planted on this show are best defense in the country for Ohio State and leading the nation in rushing.
That's right.
And then like the thing that we're not mentioning is the thing that is their bread and butter that they've hung their hat on since Ryan Day got here, which is throwing the ball. So it's like, they're going to have the best defense, the bush rushing attack. And they'll also throw it sometimes. It is. Do you find yourself, as we're being fanciful in the offseason, when you are giving actual real analysis of Ohio State and you were looking at what Ohio State has compared to what other teams have, do you sometimes worry that you sound like a crazy maniac homer when you look sometimes at the roster and think like, man, I think these guys are going to be awesome, but I don't, it's not, you're not saying this because you have scarlet colored glasses on. You're saying this because of Denzel Burke and Caleb Downs and Davison Igbinosin and Jordan Hancock and Cody Simon and Sonny Styles and JT Tuimoloau and Tyleek Williams and Jack Sawyer and like what this team actually is, right? And I guess this is the time you shouldn't, there's no reason to pull yourself back from that. But I just want to like remind people, like, this isn't a Go Bucks show. This is like what you really think based on coaching, scheme, and talent, that Ohio State might have the best defense and might have the most successful rushing attack.
Yeah, we're turning the dial a little bit to be a little more.
It's wild. Bold. It's wild. Well,
yeah. But like with the rushing attack, like I'm at like an 8.5. I'm just going to turn it to an 11. Like, and with the defense, yeah, I'm at like a 10. I'm going to turn it to a 20. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah. No, I don't. I try very hard to not get like distracted or misled by just like, you know, this is the team I'm around all the time, so of course I think they're awesome. Because I think it's pretty easy to fall into that trap, like even if you're not an Ohio State fan, just because like those are the people you talk to all the time. It's the players you're most familiar with. And like there's somebody out there that's better than that guy. Like maybe there is. There's a lot of Division I teams out there. But no, I look at this roster and I think it's the quarterback question makes it a little strange, I guess. But man, it's a really good roster, especially on defense. Like this defense is ridiculous. Like I'm less confident about the rushing prediction. I made it because I want to make the point that I think that's the direction the offense is going to be going this year. But like, I feel very good about any prediction related to this defense being awesome. Like I would be surprised if I or anyone else who is extremely bullish on this defense would end up being wrong about that.
All right, these are our 10 wild predictions for Ohio State in 2024. Let's run through them one more time. We'll start with mine. And I started off with Jeremiah Smith, the number one recruit in the country, setting the true freshman receiving record at Ohio State. I also included the idea that Nebraska will be undefeated on October 26th and Ohio State won't be. I went beardy. We had some good beard talk. Ryan Day shaves his beard is one of my wild predictions. Mm-hmm. Cody Simon having more than 100 tackles, which is not a thing that happens every year at Ohio State. And then just whatever it means to you, it's really something that's in your heart and in your gut. Ohio State running it well in short yardage, that when Ohio State gets into fourth and one, third and two, everybody on the field, on the coaching staff, in the stands, watching on TV, will like have confidence in that moment instead of feeling like, oh my gosh, this is the thing Ohio State can't do. Bill, your wild predictions, let's run through yours again. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I have that Ohio State will lead the Power Five in rushing after being pretty bad last year running the ball. That the defense will not surrender a touchdown until October, so that is no touchdowns in the first four games of the season, going into, I guess that's the Oregon game after that. Jack Sawyer will record 10 plus sacks, becoming the first Ohio State player to have double digit sacks since Chase Young in 2019. Ohio State will successfully execute a fake punt for what I believe would be the first time since 2019, not counting the Jesse Mirko play against Rutgers a couple years ago. And that Jelani Thurman will be tight end two and play 400 plus snaps for the offense this year.
Those are our wild predictions for Ohio State in 2024. When we come back, it's time to get wild with what you watching, what you eating, and what you thinking here on Kings of Columbus. Back on Kings of Columbus, Doug LaMaurice and Bill Landis. I really appreciate you guys being here. Again, if you have not consumed Kings of the North or not much of Kings of the North, we just would, you know, maybe ask you to try it out. It's on a separate YouTube channel. It's on a separate podcast channel. We cover 26 teams in Northern college football, and we're running through all kinds of interesting stuff there. The latest show that we did on Tuesday, I actually had Matt Brown, one of our new colleagues here at our company who runs the Extra Points newsletter. He is the foremost expert in the world, I think it's fair to say. I'm not the foremost expert in the world on anything. But Matt knows what's up with the EA Sports college football video game that is coming back. It's going to be released in July. It's been gone for a decade. So we talked about all the things that matter with that game, why it went away, how it came to be, what's going to be included in it, why it matters to college football. And then I gave my suggestion for a cover choice that Mike, our producer, was kind enough to mock up, and like, it looks so freaking sweet. So it's like, I hope they pick my cover boy. But anyway, it's a really good conversation. If you care about that kind of stuff, that's as good of a conversation as you're going to have about that video game, not because of me, but because of Matt Brown and everything he knows. So we would direct you to Kings of the North, where we do it twice a week. And most of the time, it's just me and Landis talking about Northern college football. But we did a video game thing. All right, let's do what you're watching first, Landis. What have you been watching?
I watched a movie that I've been wanting to watch for a while. I think it came out in 2022. It's the Robert Pattinson Batman. So it's called The Batman, I think is what it's called. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it because Robert Pattinson is in it.
Oh, he's good. He's good in it. I didn't have any like preconceived notions about Robert Pattinson, I suppose. I don't really know anything about him other than he was in Twilight. I don't think I've ever seen anything that he was in before. But I thought he was good as like mostly Batman. There's very little Bruce Wayne in this movie. And like it's a 3-hour Batman movie and there's very little Bruce Wayne.
Interesting.
I thought it was awesome. Like really? I texted my brothers afterward and said, like, is this better than the Chris Nolan Batman movies? Like, am I insane for thinking that it is better? Like I definitely enjoyed it more than Batman Begins and more than The Dark Knight Rises. Maybe I still like The Dark Knight a little more because of Heath Ledger, but this was a really, I thought, well done movie because it's like, it's more of like a crime drama thriller than it is like a superhero movie. And I guess like that's probably true of most Batman movies because like he's just a normal guy who's strong and punches people and has a lot of money. But I thought it was really well done. It's like dark. It's like kind of scary. Like not scary, but like suspenseful and kind of creepy.
Okay.
And reminded me honestly a little bit. I don't know. Maybe people have made this comparison. It reminded me of like the movie Seven.
Really?
Which is like, it's a really good movie, but it's like kind of a hard movie to watch because of how uneasy it makes you feel.
Yeah.
Not quite as violent, but like toes the line a little bit with some of the stuff that happens in it. And I just thought it was really well done. Like, and especially for like a 3-hour movie, like I did not feel like I was sitting on my couch for 3 hours watching it. So I had high hopes for it. I had been meaning to watch it for a while. I haven't had the time to, but found the time this weekend to watch it. And I was not let down by it.
I just saw it come out and said, oh, Teenage Vampire is Batman. Not for me. Mm-hmm. So you're saying I should overcome that instinct and watch this.
I would like, he's like, there's definitely, it's definitely like emo Batman. It's like, it's probably the most emo Batman has been
now. Cause the thing is I'm emo.
Yeah.
I'm like, I feel my feelings in a real way. I just don't want to watch that in a superhero.
Yeah. I think they balance it well and it's got a good cast. Like even if you can get past Robert Pattinson, like Jeffrey Wright plays Commissioner Gordon. Colin Farrell plays the Penguin and is like totally transformed. Like you can't even tell it's him. And I think they're actually doing a spinoff series with Colin Farrell as the Penguin. It's like the Penguin is like a normal guy, not like the cartoonish Danny DeVito version.
Yeah.
John Turturro's in it, who I really like. Zoe Kravitz plays Catwoman. Like it's good. It's like, okay. it's well acted. It's well written and it has like pretty good pace for a movie that's 3 hours.
All right. Maybe I'll get past, it's not like I've seen Twilight. I just have heard of it and I'm like,
okay, yeah.
I'm good. All right. So I watched a TV show that had been recommended by a couple people that we work with, including Berm. And my wife and I then ripped through all three seasons of it on Apple TV, which is Slow Horses, which is spies, British spies with Gary Oldman in the lead role. And I think it's only like 5 or 6 episodes per season. So we just like, we ripped them off. And now we're sad that like, I think season 4 is coming out in December or something. So it's really good. Like season 1, I thought was a little slow to get rolling, but then like season 2 was really good. And season 3 was really good. But the one thing about it is Gary Oldman is like a crusty old spy dude. And there's another guy on the show who's also a jerk. And there's a lot of dialogue that's like, hey, could you pass me that sandwich? And then the other person, instead of being like, yeah, here's the sandwich, will be like, you don't think I have something better to do than pass you this sandwich? And it's just like, there's a lot of like normal conversation that is just people being sarcastic jackholes to each other. And at some point, believe it or not, even for me, there's like a jackhole threshold of like, why does everything have to be? It's like a little bit of like Chandler on Friends early on when everything was like, hey, Chandler, who's that? Is that your new coworker? And he's like, no, it's the D, the sarcastic sister from What's Happening. And it's like, what is this? Like, not a normal conversation. Someone just asked you a question. But I've taken like various writing classes over the years, like gone to like adult writing workshops, because I still like want to write a book. But instead of writing the book, I go to classes about it, which means it just puts me off. Like, I don't actually have to do it. And like the only piece of advice that I remember was, there was an author who was like, when you write dialogue, you have to write like obtuse dialogue. You can't have people just talking to each other. You have to do that. Like, it's interesting to have somebody say something and then the person's response to be completely off and like off on a different tangent. In the moment, I was like, that sounds like good writing. And then was it executed? I'm like, just talk to each other like normal people. So anyway, Slow Horses is good, but I just would dial down the sarcastic jackholeness like 40%, because you cannot ask Gary Oldman anything on that show without him being a jerk. But he's good acting.
It was recommended to me, which is, I knew nothing about it. So it was recommended to me because one of my favorite shows is Justified, which was like developed by Graham Yost, who's like a producer on Slow Horses. So someone's like, oh, if you like Justified, like if you like Graham Yost stuff, you should watch Slow Horses. Like, okay. But then like, I never looked into it.
Yeah.
But like, Justified takes place in Kentucky, and this show is called Slow Horses. So I thought it was about horses. It's not about horses.
No.
Okay.
It's a weird British thing. It's just British spies. It's all in London. It's super London-y. Okay. They all say short A's when in America we say long A's, and it drives you nuts for a while. There's a part in there where they're saying the word cicada repeatedly, and they're saying cicada, 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 and it makes you want to gouge your ears out.
Like tomato.
Yeah. It's all tomato. So like, you have to get past the obtuse dialogue and the short A's, but otherwise it's a good show. I have started Justified. I'm having a little trouble getting into it. Is it at all slow in the beginning of season one? Or like, should I be rip-roaring ready to go by now?
No, like, it's a little
episodes in.
It's a little slow and disjointed, I think, in season one, partly because they had to change some stuff based off like audience feedback. So like, it's a little
okay.
There's some continuity errors, I think, in the first couple episodes because of it.
Okay. All right. I'll keep trying. All right.
The second season is very good. Margot Martindale's in it, and she rules.
Oh, I love Margot Martindale. She was in The Americans, which is one of my favorite shows. All right. What are you eating?
I had I tried a new frozen pizza for dinner.
Look at you. You are a frozen pizza connoisseur. Do you believe that you are a frozen pizza connoisseur? Do you take that mantle?
I like to consider myself one. Yeah. Because I'm not afraid. Like, I don't. It's not like, oh, Red Baron's the best. I'm only eating Red Baron. Red Baron is the best, but like, I want to try. Like, I want to expand my horizons and like compare Red Baron to other things that are available. And I think sometimes I've been guilty of this with frozen pizzas. Like, you go to like the more popular, well known brands, and like not to the section of the frozen pizza freezer that's like local ish places that just happen to freeze their pizza and have it available to you. So I got one of those, and it's not an Ohio place. I think it's a Michigan place. It's called Buddy's. And it's Detroit style pizza again. It comes in like a metal tin.
Oh,
and it was good. It was good. It was different. Like the sauce was very good. The sauce was probably the best part. The cheese is different. It's like their own unique, like proprietary cheese blend that does not taste like mozzarella. It almost tastes like a provolone. It's like a little bit of sharpness to it. But I found it to be pretty good. It was an interesting flavor combination. I don't know. I had trouble, I think, cooking it exactly the right way. It didn't quite crisp up the way that I wanted it to. And it was odd. Like, I've never seen any food that gives you instructions how to cook something in the oven tell you to put the thing in the oven with the oven off and then turn the oven on.
Oh,
so like, it cooks as the oven comes to temperature, the thing is cooking in there, and that's what this tells you to do. So that was a weird experience, and like, made me feel like I wasn't cooking it long enough or the right way. But it tasted fine. Like, I would recommend it. I've mentioned the Motor City Pizza before.
Yeah,
I liked this a little better than the Motor City Pizza, and I think very fondly of the Motor City Pizza. So if you see a Buddy's Pizza in your freezer section, I would recommend grabbing one and trying out.
I bumped up against the phrase proprietary cheese blend. That's their claim that it is a proprietary cheese blend. Does it say it on the box?
No, it says like unique cheese. It's called like Wisconsin block cheese is what they called it, but it's like a unique blend that I guess supposedly only they use.
How? Yeah, because that seems like, isn't cheese is for the world, man. I don't want that. They're not snobby about it. They're not like it's, is it secret? Like
it is secret. Like it wouldn't say what kind of, I look to see what kind of cheese was actually in the blend.
About you and your secret cheese people.
Yeah.
Don't you think cheese should be for the people?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. And I get like, hey, we do this a little differently. It makes us unique, but then you should like tell the world how to do it. Right. Yeah. You shouldn't deny people the opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I'm a little put off. I might have to try it, but I'm a little put off.
I get it.
All right. So my eating thing is actually a shopping thing because I just want to know if this happens to people. So you're at the grocery store and you're buying things. The price of a thing is $3 each. Okay. But it says if you get five of them, it's five for $10. Right. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking, right? And then when you go to check out, sometimes if you only get like three of them, they still are $3 each. But then if you have the five, when you get to the fifth and you scan the fifth, then the price comes down for all of them. So it truly is. It's $3 each unless you get five. Then it's five for $10. But sometimes when you buy them, when you go to scan them, they just scan in individually as $2. Right? That it's just, it's kind of a trick. They're tricking you to buy five of them, but actually you're getting the discount even if you only buy one. And you never know which way it's going to go until you get to the scanner. And I have a knot in my stomach about this situation every time I shop. Because sometimes I risk it and I don't want to get all five. It's like, I'm going to get three. Please be $2 each. Please be $2 each. And then if you scan them and it doesn't come down, and then it's like you have to run back and get two more to get over the threshold. Sometimes I don't risk it. I get all five. And then the first one scans in at a discount by itself. And I'm like, oh, they got me. And then I want to throw some of the ones I have and just say, I don't want these now because I'm getting the discount individually. Is there, I have to imagine, there are things that are moments in my life, in my very privileged, pretty easy life, where mundane things cause me angst because I don't actually have that much to worry about. The internal conversations I have with myself as I push my shopping cart to the scanner, wondering which way this is going to go. It's just living on the edge, man. And I just don't know if other people experience that the same way. And I don't know if I'm mad at the grocery store about it, if I actually kind of like it because they're keeping me on my toes.
Yeah, I like them keeping you on your toes. Is there not an ability to like scan before you go to the register to see what you're dealing with?
I'm too old for that. Maybe.
I don't know. Not every store has, like, I know like Target has them, but I don't know. Like, not every store has it.
Yeah. I don't think my grocery store has that. So, can you relate to this at all? Or do I sound like a crazy person?
I don't have angst about that. No, I just buy it. And if it's, if it happens to be $3 instead of $2.25, I'm just like, oh, they got me.
Oh no. My ability to just say, oh, they got me does not exist. It is a swirl of emotion. I got to tell you. Okay. I'm a crazy person. What are you thinking?
I think that if you treat a gas station pump like a parking spot, you're a jerk. Does that make me a jerk?
No. So you are saying you should not leave your car at the pump and then go inside to get a drink and a snack and go to the bathroom.
Yeah, like I think it's situational. Like I'm not sitting here saying that I've never done that. I've definitely done it. Like driving at night, there's not a lot of cars on the road. You pull into the gas station, there's not a lot of people in the gas station. There's 45 pumps. Like I'm going to leave my car there rather than get back in and move it to the front of the building. But like I was at this Sheetz, the newer Sheetz in Grandview yesterday, the day before. And it's a smaller gas station. There's only like 8 pumps, I think. And it's very popular because it's like the cheapest one around there. So like there's always a bunch of cars there. And I like sat behind someone waiting to use the gas pump for like 10 minutes, not realizing that like, cause the pump was in the thing, like when the pump was in the car.
Oh,
so yeah. I thought they were like gassing their car up while they were sitting inside the car. And I just sat there for 10 minutes, and it was just there. Like, and then I realized there was nobody in the car. And then the person came walking out with like a bunch of stuff in their hands because they went in and inconvenienced everybody who was waiting for gas because they had to go in and buy a bag of potato chips. It took them a long time to buy it. And like, it drove me crazy. I'm not the kind of person who gets like frustrated by other people. Like, people are living their lives. Sometimes you're inconvenienced, just like whatever. Go about your day. It's not the worst thing that's ever happened to you. But for some reason, that really rubbed me the wrong way. It's like I could not fathom doing that. Like, pump your gas, get back in your car, and pull forward 25 feet to the front of the building where there's ample parking space, by the way, and then go in and do your stuff so the rest of us can get our gas. And like, and I was surprised how upset it made me, because I'm like I said, I'm not the kind of person who typically gets upset by those kind of things. But it just seems like a jerk move to like treat a gas station pump at a gas station that doesn't have a lot of pumps to begin with, that is very popular, like at your own personal parking spot.
I would like to welcome you to the cohort of people who do get upset by things like that every single day. I am one of those people. Over time, I've been reminded at times, like sometimes, you know, you'll see something on Facebook or whatever, be like, you don't know what is going on in the life of the person who's doing that. Maybe they've had a terrible day. They've had something terrible happen to them. They're super stressed out. Like, yeah, they know, but like, they're just trying to get through a bad day, and they did that, and it doesn't make them a terrible person. So I try to keep that in mind sometimes. But I also think that minor things like that are very indicative and tell you something about what a person is like. And so, for instance, if one of my daughters was like dating somebody who did that, I would be like, break up with them. Right. Like, if you knew for a fact it wasn't that they were having a terrible day or they just made a mistake, you know, that like that's just how they think, that's the kind of thinking that I would be like, that indicates to me that you are a terrible person. It seems like a minor thing, but the collection of minor things in your life where you don't ever think about other people and only are worried about yourself, all of that gathered together makes you someone that like, I don't want to be friends with. I don't want my daughters to date. And so, welcome, my friend. Yeah. You might just be aging into this as you're a parent now, right?
Yeah.
Age and parenthood makes you sometimes much less tolerant of the idiots around you.
That must be it, though. Yeah. What are you thinking?
So you go to the cash machine now, and it just wants to give you $50 bills. Like, if you get out $100, the cash machine's instinct is to give you two $50 bills, right? And you've kind of got to tell it, at least at my bank, you have to tell it to give you five $20s instead. Is this a thing, right? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
This, again, makes me feel old. I can remember a time when a $50 bill may as well have been a $1 million bill. I'm not sure I saw a $50 bill until I was 40. What? A $50 bill? Like, what would that be? Because, like, nothing costs $50. Are you buying a new house with a $50 bill? Why would you need $50 bills? The idea that we have reached a threshold of normalizing $50 bills. I understand this is how it works. When I was a kid, you get four candy bars for a dollar. I understand it, but it still blows my mind. And I do not want 50s in my wallet because I'm afraid that's too much money that if I just do one dumb thing with one piece of paper, I've lost $50. That's too much pressure. I want to disperse my money. I want it in smaller bills so I can't make one mistake with one bill and lose that much. 50s. I cannot believe we have reached the point where $50 bills are normal.
Did you know that in 2022, the government printed 756 million $50 bills, the highest total of the denomination printed in 1 year in more than 40 years?
I'm getting angst again. I'm getting angst. That's too many 50s. I don't even want to know that like they're out
there. It does feel like they're more prolific now, right? I definitely feel like I see them more.
Oh, they're everywhere.
I guess I never thought about it. I never thought about it. But like, there's a bunch. Google, are there more $50 bills in circulation? And there's like a bunch of news stories about how the government printed a bunch of $50 bills in 2022.
And are they quoting like people on the street saying, I hate it. I hate it. Take them back. Burn them, but you can't burn them because then you lose money. Oh, it's horrible. Do you want 50s in your wallet?
No, no. I struggle to carry around anything more than a 20. Yeah, I don't like a 50. I don't like when it gets my birthday and I get a crisp $100 bill. Like, I don't want that in my wallet.
If I accidentally have a 50 in my wallet, all I can think about is breaking it. But then I feel guilty breaking it because it's like I bought a fountain soda for $1.99. Can you break this 50? It's a burden.
Yeah.
50s and beards. Burdens. Okay. I like talking about crazy stuff. I can just never tell whether people listened and watch us do this sometimes and are like, yes, they are men of the people. I think exactly what they think. Or do they watch this and just shake their head and like wonder why they participated in this show?
I showed up to interviews at Ohio State on Tuesday, and Mike Basford, one of the football SIDs, said, like, what are you guys watching, thinking, and eating this week? And I said, brother, you gotta listen to the show. Like, we haven't recorded it yet. So there's at least one guy out there.
Okay.
Who wants to know?
If there's one person that says, I hate 50s too, that's enough. Okay.
Yeah.
We will be back with a Kings of the North on Thursday. There's stuff happening with the College Football Playoff Committee on Wednesday as we record this. People think that like the Big Ten and the SEC are going to like take the ACC and Big 12 into the bathroom and beat them up, dunk their heads in the toilet. So like, I don't know what all this means. There's a lot of stories written ahead of time of like, get ready on Wednesday for the Big Ten and the SEC to like flex their muscles and what it means for the future of the playoffs. So we're going to have like a lot of newsy discussions that we need to have on Kings of the North. So if you care about the structure, the future, the changes in college football, we'll be covering that. And then, you know, we'll keep doing two Kings of the North a week, one Kings of Columbus a week. And then of course, all the other podcasts, snappy judgments. It's either snap judgments or snappy J's. Austin's going to punch me in the neck. Recruiting stuff with Berm, the podcast daily, all that kind of stuff that you of course have grown to love here at the podcast. Thanks to Mike Yurostowski, our producer, for making us look good and sound good. For Bill Landis, I'm Doug LeMaurice. And we changed our camera setup a little bit, right? We got new cameras. The producer, Mike, knows these things. He said my forehead's a little soft, which it's like, does it look? Does my forehead? So, you know, we're growing, we're expanding, we're buying new stuff. And so a little change there. And you can see my thing in my background now. That's a French swear word. So I hope nobody was offended by that if you're watching on YouTube. Do you know that's a French swear word?
I can guess what it means.
Yeah.
I know un poco Spanish.
So we'll see if the FCC comes after us, whatever, for having that on the show. Anyway, for Bill Landis, I'm Doug LeMaurice, and that was Kings of Columbus.